ಗುಣಾಧಿಕಾನ್ ಮುದಂ ಲಿಪ್ತೇ ಅನುಕ್ರೋ.
ಕಂಟಿನ್ಯೂಯೇಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಧ್ರುವ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಸೆನ್ಸ್ ದ ಡೈನಸ್ಟಿ ಆಫ್ ಧ್ರುವ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ದಟ್ ಬೀಂಗ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬ್ಡ್ ಇನ್ ಮೈತ್ರೇಯ ರಿಷಿ. ಬಿಫೋರ್ ಪ್ರಥಮ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ದೇರ್ ಆರ್ ಟೂ ಚಾಪ್ಟರ್ಸ್ ವಿಚ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರೈಬ್ಸ್ ದ ಸ್ಟೋರಿ ಆಫ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಅಂಗ ಅಂಡ್ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ವೇಣ. And then Pratham Maharaj's pastimes start from the 15th chapter, 15th till the 23rd chapter. Nine chapters Maitreya Rishi describes the story of Pratham Maharaj. And then 24th chapter is Rudra Geet. And then 25th to 29th chapter, in five chapters, Maitreya Rishi describes how Narada Muni preached Prachina Barisha. And then 30th and 31st chapter contain the activities of the Prachetas and how Narada Muni instructed the Prachetas. So, in one sense, the major part of the fourth canto is nine chapters which contain the story of Pratham Maharaj. So, you'll read the 17th chapter. The 15th and 16th chapter, the appearance of Pratham Maharaj and coronation of Pratham Maharaj were described. Then after he was coronated, how so many, all the different demigods, they came and offered different gifts to Pratham Maharaj, that was being described. And then the different professional reciters, Sutas, Magadhas and Vandis, they came to glorify Pratham Maharaj, but Pratham Maharaj, he said that you should glorify me after I exhibit these qualities. Since I have not even exhibited these qualities, I have not performed these activities, it's not proper for you to actually glorify me. So by that he set an example for all the future leaders how one should not simply accept glorification without exhibiting those qualities and activities, without performing those activities. And he also taught the common people how they should not simply flatter or glorify a person without seeing the proper qualities of an incarnation, without seeing the symptoms and the qualities and activities of an incarnation. One should not simply glorify a person to be an incarnation of the Lord. So in this way he taught lessons for both for the common people and also for the leaders or those who claim themselves to be incarnations. But then the Sutas, Magadhas and Vandis, but they were not actually flattering Pratham Maharaj, but they were actually trying to glorify Pratham Maharaj according to the instructions of the sages. And being under the guidance of the sages, but they nevertheless spoke about the glories of Pratham Maharaj, because all the sages, they could actually understand, they could predict the activities which Pratham Maharaj would perform. And then they actually glorified Pratham Maharaj for all the future activities which he would perform. Then Pratham Maharaj, he became pleased with them, and then he actually offered gifts to all these Sutta, Magadhas and Vandis. So that's how this chapter begins with. Maitreya Uvacha Evam sa Bhagavan Vainya Kyapito Gunakarma Bhi Chandayam Asatan Kamai Pratipuja Abhinandya Cha.
Various presentation with all the due respect and worship that
attitude. So here we see that Pratham Maharaj, he gave different gifts and presentations to all these people with great respect and worshipped them adequately. So previously there is this culture of glorifying great personalities, and that would be done by a specific group of people called as the Sutas, Magadhas and Vandis. I think Does anybody remember? I think the first canto, in the 11th chapter, Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. That purport, Vishnu Chakravarti explains exactly what is Suta, Magadha and Vandi. One who describes the history is one who... So he mentions a particular... He gives exact description. So, these people would be appointed. So even when Krishna was entering Dwarka, it was described that many old Brahmanas who did not have the proper strength to actually do some other tasks. Many old Brahmanas, they would actually approach not only Krishna. In fact, many old Brahmanas would approach the king, and they would actually sincerely glorify the king. And it's not that they would flatter the king, and they would sincerely glorify the king for the qualities and the good activities which the king would perform. And by that, the king would feel even more encouraged to perform pious activities. So there is sincerity on the part of the Brahmanas who would glorify. They would not simply flatter. And kings would also feel more encouraged to perform more pious activities. And then, being pleased with them, they would actually offer different gifts to them. They would give different charity to them. And by that, these old Brahmanas would be actually maintained. So Prabhupada explained that such Brahmanas were not, so to speak, flatterers of the kings, but the kings were actually glorified by their actions, and they were sincerely still more encouraged in pious acts by such Brahmanas in a dignified way. And because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so Brahmanas were glorified themselves by chanting the glories of the Lord. So when Krishna entered Dwarka, many old Brahmanas, they came to glorify the Lord Krishna. And it is also described in the first canto, 16th chapter, when Parishit Maharaj went on a tour, and different people came and glorified the activities of his forefathers, the activities of Parishit Maharaj. Parishit Maharaj also offered different presentations to them. So Prabhupada explains that the difference between those previous days and the present days is that the previous days, the glorifications were offered to personalities like the Pandavas, Parishit Maharaj, who are actually really worthy of actually glorification. And the glorification was, glorification contained facts and figures. They would not simply flatter. They would actually factually glorify. And they would be sufficiently rewarded. But on the other hand, in the present days, glorification is offered to some very cheap personalities, and glorification is only filled with some flattering lies, and people who glorify, they are not actually sufficiently rewarded. They are not paid or rewarded by the people. So in this way, Prabhupada actually differentiates the glorification on the previous days and the present days. And Prithu Maharaj here satisfied them with due respect and worshipped them adequately. It is not that Prithu Maharaj simply gave some gifts. One is like giving some things to people, but more than that, like giving those things with great respect. So many times people, even if you give things, but if it is not given with proper respect and proper attitude, people may not be satisfied, even though you may give so much. But on the other hand, even when a person gives only something little, but if you treat them properly, then they would be actually greatly satisfied. Like one devotee was saying that, he said that since he got married, he said that in the last 20 years, he had not given a single piece of gold to his wife. But still his wife is satisfied. He was just trying to tell the point that I did not give a single piece of gold, but because I treated her properly, she is completely satisfied. So he was mentioning that point of like how one should treat the people with proper respect. Like there was one devotee who used to stay just very close to our temple. I don't know, nowadays he's not seen, but he was just sharing a point that sometime back he went to meet one of his old friend with whom he was working previously in a company. So this devotee at a certain point he actually left that job, and then he just took up he had earned his to some extent, he earned money to some extent, then he was just taking up some small jobs just to maintain himself. But his previous colleague, he had actually he was earning quite a lot, and he had built a bungalow and a lot of cars and different things. So he went to meet that old friend, and that old friend was actually telling him that you have wasted your life by taking to this Hare Krishna. See, how much I have earned, how wealthy I am, and I am having this particular car, I can go to different countries. So he was telling so many things. So then this devotee told him that you just bring your wife and family members, I just want to ask them whether how much they are happy. So he just called them, and then he just asked his wife, so are you satisfied and are you happy? He just asked them, and that wife actually poured out her heart, and she said, my husband, he may have given so many things, but he's practically not there at home. And she started telling so many complaints, and she said, I was just about to file a divorce, complaint just after a few days. And she started practically crying, and she started actually telling so many complaints about that, how she is dissatisfied that there's practically no, he's not spending any time for the family like that. And this person was completely taken aback that he thought that he is doing so much for the family by giving so many things, by giving so many facilities and so many this thing. But he was completely taken aback when he first heard what his wife was actually, how she was completely dissatisfied. So this devotee was narrating, he was telling that how that they have so many, actually this man has provided so many facilities and comforts and things, but one thing is he's not given any time or some sweet words or some spending quality time with the family. And because of that, although so many things were given to the family, but the family members were not at all satisfied. So the point is that it is not just simply giving things, but actually treating the people with dignity. In one company, I think in one of the Prerana classes, Radhana Samar was explaining, he attended one seminar on some leadership or something. So in that leadership program, one person was giving a talk, and he said, if you want to increase the productivity of an employee in a company, so initially you may increase the productivity of an employee by increasing the salary of a person, you may increase the productivity of an employee to some extent. But after some time, how much ever you may increase the salary, the productivity of the person will not increase. But what will actually increase the productivity of a person is that when we actually give some encouragement and speak sweet words and when we appreciate that person, we can increase the productivity of a person more than simply by actually increasing the salary. So here Prithu Maharaj offered them various presentations with all due respect and worshipped them adequately. The second verse also, second verse says that how Prithu Maharaj respected everyone, not just the main important people, even up to the very menial, some very simple servants and who are doing some very simple tasks. So that's what it describes. Brahmana pramukhan varnan brithya matya purodasaha pauran janapadan shreni prakriti samapujayat.
King Prithu thus satisfied and offered all respects to all the leaders of the Brahmanas and other castes, to his servants, to his ministers and to his priests, citizens, general countrymen, people from the communities, admirers and others, and thus they all became happy.
So you see that right from the Brahmanas even to general countrymen and other people from other castes and to their servants, etc., all became very happy. In fact, later you'll see, I think this verse comes in 21st chapter, I guess. When Prithu Maharaj, after performing the 99 sacrifices, when he was returning to the capital, so it is described that how the different citizens actually welcomed Prithu Maharaj. So there it is described that both the important citizens and the common citizens welcomed the king very heartily. And he also bestowed upon them the desired blessings. So, because he actually treated everyone, the important people and even the common people, so all of them were actually very happy with him. So even we see this quality is there, even when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, so there also it is described that Krishna greeted everyone present by bowing his head or exchanging greetings or embracing, shaking hands, giving assurances, awarding benedictions, even to the lowest in rank. The word which is the Sanskrit word which is used is Ashva Pakebhyo means like Krishna respected down to the Chandalas, even to the lowest in rank. So there is another verse in this connection, the 11th canto. Tasmad bhavantam anavadyam anantaparam sarvagyam ishwaram akunta vikunta dishnyam nirvinnadir ahamuhe virjinabhitapto narayanam narasakam sharanam prapadye. So Uddhava says, especially these two words, narayanam narasakam. He said, like, I offer my obeisances to Krishna who is Narayan. So here the word Narayan means one who gives shelter to Lord Narayan. I offer my obeisances to Krishna who gives shelter to Lord Narayan and who is also the friend of the infinitesimal living entity, Narasakam. So, what I am saying is like, this quality is present because the Lord has that quality. He gives shelter to the greatest person, Narayan, and also friend of the infinitesimal living entity. The same quality is also present in the devotee of the Lord, like Prithu Maharaj is giving respects even to the Brahmanas and even to some simple people also. So Prabhupada, Hridayananda Maharaj writes in purport that usually great people may have time for important people, they may not have time for some simple common people. But here the Lord actually gives shelter to Lord Narayan, and also is a friend of an infinitesimal living entity. So next verse. So now from the third to seventh verse, Vidura is asking questions based on what he had heard in the previous chapter. Because in the previous chapter, the professional reciters, they talked about the different activities of Prithu Maharaj which he would perform in the future. So based on those verses, Vidura asks, in these four verses he asks questions. In the third verse he asks three questions. These three questions are related to the third and fourth. Third verse he asks three questions, fourth verse he asks two questions. These five questions are related to the pastime of Maharaj Prithu milking the earth. And then the fifth verse he asks one question. So that is about Prithu Maharaj meeting the four Kumaras, Sanat Kumara. And then in the sixth and seventh verse he is actually requesting that please narrate about actually all the activities of Prithu Maharaj. So third verse. Vidura uvacha kasmadadara gorupam daritri bahurupini yam dodoha prutustatra kovatso dohanam chakim.
Vidura inquired from the great sage Maitreya, "My dear Brahman, since Mother Earth can appear in different shapes, why did she take the shape of a cow? And when King Prithu milked her, who became the calf and what was the milking pot?"
Because I think the previous chapter, the professional reciters, they told about the future activities of Prithu Maharaj. Huh. Yeah. 22nd verse. For the living facility of all citizens, will milk the earth, which is like a cow. So here he is asking that three questions. Why did Mother Earth take the shape of a cow? And thirdly, when Prithu Maharaj milked the cow, who became a calf and what was the milking pot? Huh. These are the three questions. And then there are two more questions in the next verse. One question is related to the same pastime, another question is related to the next pastime. Prakritya vishama devi krita tena samakatam tasya medyam hayam deva kasya ketor apaharat.
The surface of the earth is by nature low in some places and high in others. How did King Prithu level the surface of the earth, and why did the king of heaven Indra steal the horse meant for the sacrifice?
So the first four questions are answered by Maitreya Rishi in this chapter and the next chapter, Maharaj Prithu milking the earth. And Prithu Maharaj performing, the next question is about why did Indra steal the horse meant for sacrifice. So that in order to answer that, Prithu Maharaj's performance of the 99 Ashwamedha sacrifices, so that will be described in the 19th chapter. And also that, in fact, the episode continues to the 28th chapter also, because Lord Vishnu appears and then Lord Vishnu's instruction to Prithu Maharaj and Prithu Maharaj's prayers to Lord Vishnu, 28th chapter, continues there. And then we can say the whole episode continues in the 21st chapter also, because 21st chapter finally Prithu Maharaj returns from the sacrificial arena and he comes to the city. And then how the citizens receive him, and then he gives instruction to the citizens. The 21st chapter. So next question Vidura asks about Prithu Maharaj's meeting with Sanat Kumara. So that is described in the 22nd chapter. Prithu Maharaj meeting with Sanat Kumara, Sanat Kumara's instructions to Prithu Maharaj, and finally Prithu Maharaj expressing his gratitude to Sanat Kumara, and then the last part of the chapter describes the last part of the chapter Maitreya Rishi describes the different qualities of Prithu Maharaj, and the 23rd chapter is Prithu Maharaj going back to Garden. The 5th verse. सनत्कुमारात् भगवतो ब्रह्मन् ब्रह्मविदुत्तमात् लब्ध्वा ज्ञानं स विज्ञानं राजर्षिकां गतिं गतः.
The great saintly king Maharaj Prithu received knowledge from Sanat Kumar, who was the greatest Vedic scholar. After receiving knowledge to be applied practically in his life, how did the saintly king attain his desired destination?
So here, how did the saintly king attain his desired destination? So this is like, answer to this question is 23rd chapter. 23rd chapter it is being described, Prithu Maharaj going back to Godhead. So in this purport, Prabhupada explains that he talks about the importance of accepting a guru. As King Prithu was illustrated, one who is serious about receiving transcendental Vedic knowledge must accept a guru or a spiritual master in one of these four disciplic successions. It is said that unless one accepts a mantra from one of these sampradayas, the so-called mantra will not act in Kali Yuga. Many sampradayas have sprung up without authority and they are misleading the people by giving unauthorized mantras. The rascals of these so-called sampradayas do not observe the Vedic rituals and regulations. Although they are addicted to all kinds of sinful activity, they still offer the people mantras and thus mislead them. Just like Narada Muni described, told Dhruva Maharaj, Japascha paramo gukhya. Japascha paramo gukhya. Shruyatam me nripatmaja. So Prabhupada explains that Narada Muni is saying that you chant this confidential mantra. So one may say that if it is confidential, why is it mentioned in the writing of the Srimad Bhagavatam? One may find it in any book. The mantras, say, Om Namah Bhagavataya Vasudevaya Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So Prabhupada explains that it is confidential in the sense that one may receive a published mantra anywhere, but unless it is accepted through the chain of disciplic succession, the mantra does not act. It is said by authoritative sources that any mantra chanted without having been received from the disciplic succession has no efficacy. What is the verse corresponding to this? Sampradaya vihina yena mantrascha nishvala. So it's just like pirated software and original software. So pirated software may appear like that, but then it may not work properly. But of course, if you read Mahaprabhu's conversation with Satyaraj Khan in the Madhya Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a Prabhupada writes a long purport in regards to the holy name of the Lord. He says that Diksha is not necessary. Holy name is actually, if a person is chanting the holy name is actually sufficient to take a person back to God. So that is also, in other places those verses are also mentioned. But I would say in the sense that in general, like we can, when we accept a bona fide spiritual master, when you come in contact with the, when we accept a bona fide spiritual master, and then when we render devotional service under his guidance, then the advancement becomes very quick. But if a person thinks that, oh, Diksha is not necessary, I will just chant the holy name. Like, if a person has the attitude that, so what is the need of taking the trouble of accepting a spiritual master and surrendering to a spiritual master, then holy name itself is sufficient. Then in that mood, if he avoids accepting a spiritual master, Krishna Chakravartakar explains in one purport, then he is actually committing a third offense to the holy name. Third offense to the holy name is that to disobey the orders of a spiritual master. So one is after accepting a spiritual master, disobeying his orders, that is third offense. But if a person thinks that, oh, if I accept a spiritual master, I will have to follow his orders. So why should I accept? So I will not accept only, and anyway holy name is sufficient. So with that attitude, if we just chant the holy name, just to avoid the trouble of following the instruction of spiritual master, then he is such a person is also actually committing the third offense to the holy name. Although technically it means that disobeying the order of a spiritual master. Here the person has not accepted a spiritual master, but even though he is not accepted, because he is not accepting a spiritual master with the attitude of not wanting to take the trouble of surrendering to a spiritual master, then he is also committing the third offense to holy name. So one can make the point is like every incarnation of the Lord, especially whenever the Lord appeared in a human form, in every incarnation he has accepted a spiritual master. So in that sense, so we also have to follow in the footsteps of the Supreme Lord. And it is mentioned that tad vijnanartham sa gurum eva abhigachet. Like one must accept a spiritual master. It's explained as like compulsory. So that's what is explained here. So Prithu Maharaj showed by his example that one should receive knowledge from a bona fide sampradaya. Therefore he accepted Sanat Kumar as a spiritual master. So 6th and 7th verse. Yachanyat api krishnasya bhavan bhagavata prabho shravas sushravasa punyam purva deha katashrayam bhaktaya me anuraktaya tava chadokshajasya cha vaktum arhasi yoduhyat vainya rupena gamimam.
Krithu Maharaj was a powerful incarnation of Lord Krishna's potency. Consequently, any narration concerning his activity is surely very pleasing to hear, and it is produce all good fortune. As far as I am concerned, I am always your devotee as well as a devotee of the Lord, who is known as Adokshaja. Please therefore narrate all the stories of King Prithu, who in the form of a son of King Vena milked the cow saved earth.
So here he is saying that please describe about all the activities of Prithu Maharaj, who is an Shaktyavesh incarnation of the Lord. Yat chanyat api krishnasya. And bhaktaya anuraktaya. I am very much attached to hearing this, and I am very devoted to you. Bhaktaya, I am devoted to you, or I am a devotee and I am very much attached to this. I'm very much attached to hearing. Tavacha adoksha jasya cha vaktum argasi yodrukhyet vainya rupena gamimam. So Prabhupada comments on the word adokshaja. He says that adokshaja means beyond the perception of the material senses. Since one can form only an impersonal idea on the strength of one's material senses, the Lord is known as Adokshaja. With our material senses, we can only get an understanding of the impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth, not the ultimate, the Bhagavan aspect of the Absolute Truth. So therefore, the Lord is called as Adokshaja. So, Prithu Maharaj is a living entity, but he is empowered with the Supreme Lord to actually rule with the ruling potency of the Lord. Is the Shaktiyavesh incarnation of the Lord. Just like when we say incarnation, in fact, so the word like incarnation comes from the word karna. Karna means flesh. So in the Western world, when the divinity is manifested, when the divinity is expressed through a material body, when the divinity is expressed through a material body, or when divinity appears in a material body, then it is called as incarnation. But actually in the Vedic concept, although Prabhupada has used the word incarnation, but when the Lord appears, it is not that the divinity has appeared in a material body, the Lord appears in his own spiritual body. But Prabhupada's, the more appropriate word would be actually descent. But Prabhupada has used this word incarnation because this concept of the Supreme Lord appearing in his self-same spiritual body, it is something unknown in the Western world. So in trying to explain some unknown philosophy or a complex philosophy, so Prabhupada is using some, if he uses even unfamiliar word, then it will become even more difficult. Already the philosophy itself is something unknown. And in order to describe that, if a person uses unfamiliar word, then it will be even more difficult. So Prabhupada uses the familiar word, although it is not the accurate word, to describe the unfamiliar or the new or the complex philosophy. So although the word incarnation refers to divinity expressed in a material body having a flesh, although it is not the right word, but Prabhupada is using this familiar word to describe the word avatar, which actually signifies the Supreme Lord who appears in the self same spiritual body in the material world. Next verse. Suta Vuvacha Chodito Vidurenaivam Vasudeva Katam Prati Prashasyatam Pritamana Maitreya Pratyabhashata.
Sutta Goswami continued, when Vidura became inspired to hear of the activities of Lord Krishna in his various incarnations, Maitreya also being inspired and being very pleased with Vidura began to praise him. Then Maitreya spoke as follows.
So you see that this kind of verse comes quite often in the third and fourth chapter. Third and fourth canto, where Vidura is actually expressing that how I am not at all satiated by hearing the spiritual tasks which you have been describing. And Maitreya Rishi feels even more encouraged, and Vidura becomes even more eager to actually hear. So Prabhupada says that Krishna Katha is spiritually so inspiring that the reciter and the hearer are never exhausted. And that is the nature of spiritual talks. We have actually seen that one can never become satiated by hearing the conversations between Vidura and Maitreya. Both of them are devotees, and the more Vidura inquires, the more Maitreya is encouraged to speak. A symptom of spiritual talks is that no one feels tired. So if you see, just like Arjuna asked in the 10th chapter, Vistare Natmano Yogam Vibhutim Cha Janardana Bhuya Kataya Triptirhi Shrinvato Na Asti Memrutam. So Arjuna says that please describe your opulences in great detail. Vistare Natmano Yogam. And Bhuya Kataya Triptirhi, the more I actually hear about it, the more I want to hear more. I never feel satiated by hearing. Vistare Natmano Yogam Vibhutim Chajanardana Bhuya Kataya Triptirhi Shrinvato Nasi Memrutam. 10th chapter, I think 17, 18, somewhere. So usually if we see that in the modern world, many times people equate watching TV to be actually equivalent to happiness, or watching some movies or serials or something. Like even in the trains, if we see nowadays, if we go, like people, the sophisticated mobile phones have come, they load the some different movies that they keep watching during the train journey. So people actually equate watching TV with happiness. And sometimes when such people, when they hear that spiritual world is a place where there is eternal happiness, so they may imagine, oh, spiritual world may be a, means it's an world of eternal daytime television. Eternity, they may be watching TV. So, but when they hear about the specific things which happen in the spiritual world, and they get a question in their mind, just like the spiritual world is just described that Krishna is just herding the cows and people are just hearing, chanting, or they are just doing some simple activities. So in the modern world, happiness, people think that happiness comes from sophisticated technological gadgets. When you get a latest gadget or some TV monitor, or so then a person can get more happiness. But in the spiritual world, we see that people derive happiness by simple activity. And the example of simple activity is like, the simplest of all activity is just hearing. Here, Vidura is just hearing from Maitreya Rishi. Or Arjuna is saying that, Bhuya Kataya Triptirhi Shrinvato Nasti Memrutam. That the more I hear about you, the more I want to hear, and I never feel satiated. So if we see, that is a Gita verse, that Bhuya Kataya Triptirhi Shrinvato Nasti Memrutam Vistare Natmano Yogam Vibhutim Cha Janardana. I think 10.17 or 18. 10.18. So we see, like Arjuna, or here for that matter Vidura, is saying that by simple activity of hearing, he feels so much of happiness. So that means, what actually brings satisfaction to living entity's heart is not the technological sophistication, but actually loving reciprocation. So when people deal with some sophisticated gadgets, there is only a little fleeting titillation. A person, it's like a, once a, something new, or it's a person feels, simply feels titillated. But there is no actually real happiness or satisfaction. But in the spiritual world, we see, just when a person performs a simple activity, it's like a hearing is a very simplest activity. There's no sophistication involved in that. But when you, from this we can actually get an information, when you perform a simple activity but with love, that even that simplest of activity as hearing but with love, and they can be actually supremely fulfilling. So in that sense, we don't need some sophisticated things, we just need to perform simple activity but with the proper attitude, then that can actually give, that can be supremely fulfilling. So that is what we can actually hear from these verses of Vidura and Maitreya Rishi. And another thing we can see, like many times when people read some scientific books, so initially when a person is reading some science, people are looking for discovering some new things in the subject matter. So when they discover something new, then they feel certain, they feel little excited. But in spirituality, in the spiritual books, in one sense there is nothing new to discover. Of course, sometimes we may discover some new things, but after some time there is nothing, sometimes there is nothing new to discover. Initially we may discover something new, but after some time there will not be anything new to discover. Then one may feel that if there will not be anything new to discover, how then won't this make spiritual knowledge boring? But actually if we see, in science the purpose of knowledge is actually to acquire new information about different things and how they work, and about the nature of the different laws. But in the case of an information is not something, is not a some living person. It's just an information, is just a matter. So because information does not live, since it is not a person, information cannot love the person who is trying to acquire him. So information can only excite a person because of its novelty. Information, because it does not love, or because it is not some living person, information can only excite a person because of its novelty. But after discovering that information, for example, like say how a mobile phone works, or how a particular mathematical theorem is proved or something, after discovering that, then that newness and the charm ends. So only when there is a novelty, then there is an excitement. So after the discovering that, then the newness ends. But in the case of the spiritual knowledge, so this with respect to material knowledge, but in the case of spiritual knowledge, the purpose of spiritual knowledge is not to discover something new. The purpose of spiritual knowledge is actually revive our relationship with Krishna. And but in the case of the material knowledge, the information is not some living person. But in the case of the spiritual knowledge, we are trying to actually revive our relationship with Krishna. And the knowledge about Krishna, because Krishna is a living person and he has a loving nature, knowledge about him is not only exciting because of its novelty, but also because the more we try to understand Krishna, Krishna actually reciprocates with that person, because Krishna is a living person and he is filled with so much of love, that Krishna actually reciprocates with the person who is trying to understand him. So therefore, the trying to know more and more about Krishna, it is not, it can actually go on forever. In the case of material knowledge, it can be exciting only because of its novelty, but once after understanding, it ends actually, the novelty ends. But in the case of spiritual knowledge, because we are trying to understand Krishna, and Krishna can actually reciprocate with us, so is trying to know about Krishna, trying to hear about Krishna, it can actually go on forever, and it will be actually constantly refreshing. So the point is that that definitely when we read scriptures, we may discover some new information that may be there, definitely. But the essential gift of the scriptures is not in actually discovering new information, but the essential gift of the scriptures is actually to revive our connection with the Supreme Lord. To actually establish our connection with the Supreme Lord, not simply to understand something new. So when we read the scriptures to that extent for actually establishing our relationship with Krishna, to that extent, reading of the scriptures will forever remain exciting. Like a few days last week back, going through us, giving the 3-day seminar on Gita. So he was mentioning that one is to become amazed by reading scriptures and another is to feel grateful. He said sometimes when you understand the technical information about like how the particular thing works, you felt amazed, oh, how it works. And even when we read the scripture, sometimes the technical details of, say, as far as possible, we also try to understand how the creation happens, etc. We do that. But more than that, we ultimately want to feel grateful. We want to feel grateful. So he said that when we want to feel grateful, when we develop this consciousness, then reading of the Gita can remain exciting forever. So he mentioned that the most important thing is to actually develop the right consciousness while reading the scriptures. So if we develop the right consciousness while reading the scriptures, then even though we may read the same thing, it may forever remain exciting. So that's why the purpose of reading the scriptures is not mainly to get something new, but to actually to revive our lost connection with Krishna. So then the reading of the Gita will actually remain forever exciting. So now Maitreya Rishi starts describing the answers. Maitreya Vuvacha Yadabhishikta Pruturanga Viprair Amantrito Janataya Chapala Prajanirane Kshiti Prishtayetya Shukshama Deha Patimabhya Vochan.
The great sage Maitreya continued, "My dear Vidur, at the time King Prithu was enthroned by the great sages and brahmanas and declared to be the protector of the citizens, there was a scarcity of food grains. The citizens actually became skinny due to starvation. Therefore, they came before the king and informed him of their real situation."
So, if you see, like this chapter, in one sense, if you see, this chapter and next chapter describes that how the citizens of Prithu Maharaj, they were starving due to hunger, and they come to Prithu Maharaj that please actually relieve us of our hungry condition. And then Prithu Maharaj, how he actually milks the earth, that's what this chapter and next chapter is. So if we see on one sense, this is just Prithu Maharaj is performing some humanitarian activity, performing some philanthropic activity, is feeding the food to the citizens. But one may say, like, why such a just a philanthropic activity or a humanitarian activity of a Prithu Maharaj that is described in the Paramahamsa Samhita? So if we say, as a king, Prithu Maharaj, his duty was to actually give protection to the citizens. And as a, like, different places it is explained, I think the first canto, 9th chapter, one of the Bhishma Dev, passing over Bhishma Dev, Prabhupada writes in one of the last purport. He explains there that one of the duties of a king is that king should see to the welfare of the citizens from all angles of social, political, economic and spiritual upliftment. And he mentions in another purport in the 4th canto, 9th chapter in Uttanapad, that 9th chapter end, he mentions that if the head of the government is saintly, certainly the citizens become saintly and they are very happy because both their spiritual and physical needs and hankerings are satisfied. Means like king satisfies not only the spiritual needs but also the physical needs also. And so this is one of the duties of a king. So in one sense, like if we see now, these two chapters describe Prithu Maharaj, how he satisfied the physical needs of the citizens. And then the 21st chapter describes how Prithu Maharaj gave instructions to the citizens. So, in one sense, when you actually first take care of people of their physical needs, in the sense, ultimate purpose is we want to actually give Krishna consciousness. But sometimes, because people are not at a level to immediately take the spiritual instructions, we may have to address their immediate needs when they are actually, especially starving out of hunger. So Prithu Maharaj took care of them, and then when he gave spiritual instructions, they were actually very receptive to hear from him. So in that sense, these things were actually connected to his giving Krishna consciousness, spiritual instructions to them, which comes later. So, if we see, even in our own, this thing also, we, of course, like when we are preaching Krishna consciousness, like, we are, like in our college programs, when there is a good prasadam, etc., then people become even more receptive. Many times people initially most of attracted by good prasadam, they come for the programs. So when these things are taken care of course prasadam we are giving Krishna only through that, but still when there is when their physical needs, like even when you go on a yatra, we have lectures etc., but apart from that, we also need to have maybe some swimming in some place or some scenic spot. So there are other needs also need to be addressed in order that they actually take to Krishna consciousness. So in that sense, Prithu Maharaj apparently performing his humanitarian activities actually related with this actually giving Krishna consciousness to them later. And another thing is, it is a duty of a king to actually give protection to the citizens in all levels. And he is doing it in a devotional manner. When ordinary people, like when so many philanthropists and altruists, when they perform, many of the philanthropists and altruists, they are actually atheists. Many people who give charity, they may give so much in charity, but they may not believe in God, many people. But like there are many quotes of Prabhupada where Prabhupada condemns philanthropies, altruism. So, but essentially what Prabhupada is condemning is that he is actually condemning many people, they equate philanthropy with service to God. So that is what Prabhupada condemns. Because when Prabhupada was in 1960s, 70s, that time because of this, I think Arya Samaj and different thing, Vivekananda, they propagated this Manav Seva is Madhav Seva. So when they equate philanthropy with service to God, then it actually becomes offensive. So like one is when you read the Gita ladder in the 12th chapter. So if you see, the lowest is that a person is completely selfish. He doesn't think about others. But higher than that is selflessness for others on the material platform. And the higher than selfishness is actually doing some philanthropic activity or altruistic activity. Uh-huh. And higher than that is actually doing something for Krishna, working for Krishna. And Prabhupada says, and Krishna says, higher than that is actually performing the sadhana bhakti. And higher than that is actually fixing the intelligence on Krishna. And higher than that is actually fixing the mind on Krishna. So Krishna says that, if you fix your mind upon me and fix your intelligence upon me, and you will come to me without fail. And if you cannot do that, you perform regulative practice of sadhana bhakti. And if you cannot do that, work for me. And if you cannot do that, at least do some work for some good cause. So in this way, and lowest is actually selfishness. So this is the normal hierarchy. But when a person, so selflessness for Krishna's sake is actually higher than selflessness just for others, without having that, without bringing Krishna into the picture. But when a person is selfless, but when a person equates that selflessness or altruistic activity with service to God, or when a person says this is actually greater than service to God, then such a so-called selfless person becomes actually lower than the selfish person. So normal hierarchy is that selfless person is higher than a selfish person, and higher than a selfless person is that one who is selfless for Krishna's sake. But when the selfless person, one who is performing a humanitarian activity, when he equates his humanitarian activity with service to Krishna, when he says Manav Seva is Madhav Seva, that so-called selfless person is committing an offense to Krishna. And when a person commits an offense, the hierarchy gets reversed. Then the selfless person becomes lower than the selfish person. He becomes actually lower than the selfish person. That's what happened in the case of Shaubari Muni. Shaubari Muni was trying to do, in one sense, a philanthropic activity, trying to do welfare for the fishes. But then he committed an offense to Garuda. Because he committed an offense, he became actually degraded than a normal selfish person, that he got attracted to, he wanted to marry all the 51 daughters of King Mandata. So the offense actually changes, reverses the hierarchy. So the point is, in the case of Prithu Maharaj, he is not performing some philanthropic activity like a modern day philanthropist. He is performing these activities with the proper devotional disposition. With the proper devotional disposition. And secondly, it is the duty of a king to take care of the citizens in all levels. And when you take care of the citizens, especially on a physical level and emotional level, then they become receptive to the spiritual instruction which you would want to give. So that is why, if we see, recently Radhana Swami Maharaj started this project, Prayag Project. Prayag Project is that to take care of the villagers, Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati, to take care of the spiritual aspect of the directly giving Krishna consciousness to the villagers. And another is providing some water and helping them in their agriculture, helping them in their education, medical needs. So, in the sense, when they are also taken care of according to their capacity, then they become receptive even to take Krishna consciousness. So, it is not that philanthropy is the goal. Philanthropy can be used as a tool in order to give Krishna consciousness. Philanthropy is not the goal. Giving Krishna consciousness is the ultimate goal. But in order to give Krishna consciousness, we may have to use different tools according to the people whom we actually deal with. So like we use some PowerPoint or video as a tool in order to drive a particular point. So we may use philanthropy as a tool under the guidance of people. Yeah, what was your question?
the humanities, you know, for the society. But you are doing devotional service for yourself only. So we are better than, you know, what all of you are doing. So is there, you know, this hierarchy is mentioned, you know, so that, you know, we can refer, you know, sometime.
Yeah, of course, this is for our understanding.
Maybe, you know, in
so
Vishnu
sense, like when in a practical level, when we deal with them, according to time, place, and receptivity of the person, we may have to explain to them the sense. So, the sense we can tell them, you are taking care of the bodily, we are trying to take care of the soul. The sense we can work together, we can tell them, we can tell different ways, or we can say that, even in ISKCON, we are trying to do midday meal scheme, we are also trying to do that. And there are other other ways, like just like if you're just trying to, like, you may help a person on the physical level, but then again he will become hungry, again the different problems will come. Why not address the root cause of all the problems? And Prabhupada gives an example of that. Son of a rich person, the dealing with the son of a rich person who has actually left his father. Ultimate solution is to actually connect that person with the father. So we can try to explain that. But this is like sometimes people, when they become offensive, is when they equate with the service to God, then the hierarchy gets reversed. But then we may have to deal with them in such a way that they don't commit offense. Like sometimes, because of our dealings, we can either bring out the good side or the bad side of the person. So we may have to deal with them so that they somehow accumulate more ajnana sukriti, or even if they have their attitude, that the offensive nature does not come out. So how we deal with them on a practical level, that is a different thing.
Puji, this is one devotee, you know, who was asking. So he was new, so, you know, I gave some kind of answer, which is close to this only.
Hmm.
But one more question, you know, he said that, you know, by serving to parents, is Lord will be pleased, you know, why you are, you know, that is the highest. So that is mental concoction only, and, you know, this kind of concoction is all over, you know, especially North India. So, although I could, you know, make it more shastrically, you know, the soul point of view, is there any something, you know, which apart from that we can say?
See, there are so definitely serving the parents is one of the duties, one of the dharma, but there is like, what is the highest dharma? You can also say that, Krishna says, Pitaham asya jagatav mata data pitamaha. You are saying, serving to the parents, so I am also serving the parents. So, so that is that. Krishna is the greatest father. So, we can say that also in the sense, there is like highest dharma and other dharma. The main is like, we try to reconcile. As far as possible, we try to, like, in, we'll following the Paro Dharma, we also try to follow the other dharmas. But of course, in the Brahmacharya Ashram, we are trying to give our life for Guru and Krishna. We will not be able to take care of the parents the way others have been taken care of. But still, we are doing the greatest good to them also by practicing Krishna consciousness. So if they say it is the highest dharma, it's dharma, we accept it. Krishna himself says that austerity of the body is to actually respect the parents. But the highest dharma is actually to worship the Supreme Father. So another point, no. So there is I just want to read one more quote and then we'll proceed. So this is a verse from Tattva Vivek or Amnaya Sutra written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, those who think that devotion to God and kindness to the jivas are mutually different from each other and perform accordingly in their life, such persons will not be able to follow the devotional culture. Their performances are only a semblance of devotion. Therefore, all the types of beneficence to others, like kindness, friendliness, forgiveness, charity, respect, etc., are included in bhakti. Among these, according to the triple categories of the recipients, that is high, medium and low, the actions of respect, friendliness and kindness are the very form of love and the characteristic portion of bhakti. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions, charity of medicines, clothes, food, water, etc., shelter during adversities, teaching of academic and spiritual educations, etc., are the activities included in the devotional culture. So this is a quotation from Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he actually talks about the importance of doing general kind activities to people. So sometimes devotees, in the name of paralysis by analysis, because of too much analysis, we actually fail to show even the basic kindness which even the normal people show. So we have to be we should show the basic kindness whenever it is required. So we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Paramahamsa Samhita, this section of Prithvi Maharaj removing the hunger of the citizens by actually producing proper food grain, that is described. And later Rantidev also, he just actually gave the food and charity to the different people, and that is glorified in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In one sense, you see, it's not nothing spiritual about it, but externally if he says it's nothing spiritual, but Rantidev, the act is actually glorified. And Shibhi Maharaj is also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we have to understand the humanitarian activity in the right perspective.
Is not the goal, and of course it is the king's duty also, you said earlier. But you also said that king would satisfy not only the material duties but also needs, but also the spiritual needs. So is there an account of Rantidev or King Shibhi that they were also fulfilling the spiritual needs? Or
of course in the Bhagavatam it's not mentioned, but in the case of Rantidev, what is the main it may be there in other places definitely, but his main the attitude of how he was willing to sacrifice his own body. Like sometimes if you see it's more difficult to actually, it is easy to give some possessions to others, but it is more difficult to give some prasadam from your plate to others. Like the food is something like which is, we identify ourselves with the it is going to directly nourish our body, and the attachment to the body is actually more stronger than the attachment to the possessions. So Rantidev, he is willing to actually give up his own life just to actually maintain other. So it appears he's like he's not giving some Krishna consciousness, but definitely he was a saintly king, he was definitely in Krishna consciousness for others. But his attitude of selflessness, paradukha dukhi, that is being highlighted there. And he was doing in a devotional consciousness. There may be other philanthropists you may see nowadays. They may also be doing some sacrifice, etc. But they may not be doing in a God conscious manner. They are just doing selflessly. But these kings, they are actually doing in perfect Krishna consciousness. Seeing them as a part and parcel of God. And he himself being a servant of God, he wants to serve the other part and parcel of God in that manner.
So, which is the verse? 10th verse, no?
Vayam rajan jatarena bitapta yataagnina kotarastena vriksha Tvamadhyayata sharanam sharanyam yahasadito vrittikara patirna tanno bhavan ihaturatavennam kshudarditanam naradeva deva yavannanankhya mahavujjitorja vartapatistvam kilalokapala.
Dear King, just as a tree with a fire burning in the hollow of trunk gradually dries up, we are drying up due to the fire of hunger in our stomachs. You are the protector of surrendered souls, and you have been appointed to give employment to us. Therefore, we have all come to you for protection. You are not only a king, but the incarnation of God as well. Indeed, you are the king of all kings. You can give us all kinds of occupational engagements, for you are the master of our livelihood. Therefore, O King of all kings, please arrange to satisfy our hunger by the proper distribution of food grains. Please take care of us, lest we soon die for want of food.
So these three verses, 9 to 11, the citizens are actually appealing to Prithu Maharaj to satisfy their hunger. So Prabhupada explains that the duty of a king is to make sure that there is proper food distribution of food grains, and all this, and the second duty he mentions is that all the citizens should be employed according to their propensities.
Prabhu, I can ask one question. I heard the quote of Bhaktivinoda Thakur which you said. I came across it before also. We have to reconcile between what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says and what Prabhupada speaks in his conversations. You know, because Prabhupada is very vehemently opposed to eye camps or you know, food distribution or anything like that. In Prabhupada's times, there was no term called food for life. Prabhupada only called it Krishna Prasadam. But in the West, many of the Western people felt going with a van with the name Krishna Prasadam, people will not understand it, so they coined a new name called Food for Life, which was never told by Prabhupada, actually. And besides that, when Prabhupada told about distributing prasadam, it was always accompanied by the holy name. Like, for example, you go to a place, Zarabi Slum or somewhere, you chant the holy name, children come and they receive a plate of prasad from you. As soon as they see you, what do they call you? Hare Krishna, they will call. But nowadays, we are more known as Akshaya Patra than Hare Krishna. The Akshaya Patra has replaced the two golden words, Hare Krishna. You know? So, there is a very great danger of our movement becoming identified as a social service movement rather than as a spiritual service movement. And this was the very same reason why Prabhupada was so strong about it. Another danger is that devotees who are involved in this type of activities, they may start considering their material services to be a success. For example, doing this many number of eye camps or this much plates distributed, we are doing. And the number of people who are touched by it, that is actually not a devotional success. Devotional success, like in this room, if I have only two people attending my Bhagavad Gita lecture, that is a far more greater success than 2 million people eating you know, food from my hands, he's hearing no holy name at all. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, if in a temple your pujari is ringing a bell and worshipping the Lord, and nobody is taking darshan also except the pujari, that is by far superior to another man feeding 10,000 people. You know, this conviction every Hare Krishna devotee should have. The Hare Krishna devotee means we should have so much faith in the path of devotional service. We should be convinced if a pujari is ringing a bell and doing aarti for the Lord with nobody to take darshan of the Lord, it is million times superior than feeding 10,000 people. So actually social service has no locus standi at all in front of devotional service. This is like earth and that's like sky. That's a very big difference. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says is actually, when we talk about that statement, we are much different than the kings. If you say king, king becomes a father of the praja, and it becomes obligatory on the part of the king to feed the food to the public, to give them clothes, to give them a place to live, and provide them some land to till the land, and give them cows and all these things. So the king is obligated. As a spiritual organization, we are not obligated to the public like that. We are only obligated to serve them spirituality. You know, distributing Bhagavad Gita's, distributing the holy names, you know, giving them the transcendental enlightenment. But the Prabhupada often uses the word rascals and rogues and politicians. Those are the fellows supposed to provide the food, clothing, shelter to the public, and they are not doing it. It is their crime. Probably you have to reform them. They do their work, we do our work. It should be combined like that. And if the devotees lose their identity as Krishna Das, and they do social service and identify themselves strongly with it, you know, they are likely to lose their staunch faith in Krishna, which is very, very vital aspect of spiritual life. In the name of combining both. You see, Ranti Dev, example which you had given also, Ranti Dev actually was a pure devotee. And he was also a king. So 48 days vrata he kept for the that vrata was actually oriented towards the Supreme Lord for the welfare of Praja. Like that he was doing. And then when the Shudra and Chandala and all of them came one by one and all, you know, he was willing to forego whatever was there. His body was trembling. And then those people who came, they all transformed into demigods. And then they you know, blessed him also and everything. So oftentimes the Rantidev story is taken as a social welfare story or something like that by some people. But they fail to mention that Rantidev was a pure devotee of Krishna and he was doing a sacrifice for the Supreme Lord, which will bring forth welfare for his praja also. Similarly, people take the story of Pundalik serving his mother and father in Pandharpur. Then Lord told him, I am Vitthal, I will stand on the you know, eat your foot, brick, and then you serve your mother and father. And once I heard in lecture, why the Lord told him to serve mother and father? That nobody explains. They were pure devotees of Krishna. Just like Lord Chaitanya told Gopalabhatta Goswami, your parents are pure devotees. You serve them, and then when they are gone, then you come and join. You don't marry. You know, he told him like that. So the devotional aspect comes first, and then, like for example, we were in Pune, we were having one facility for the boys coming for the program. Those boys who come for our weekly program, we will teach them 1 hour of some C++ or something like that. You know, we made that facility. So 6 to 7, you know, that will be class, and then 7 to 8, C++ you can attend. So many boys said, wonderful, seniors, our teachers are so good, so they won't come for the class. And then 7 o'clock they will directly come. We told them, you see, this class is only for the devotee boys. If you are a devotee boy, then you get the class. Otherwise, you will not get it. But they said, we like the C++ class, but not the Gita class. Sorry, sir, we are not there for you. We told them. For that, you go and join NIIT or somebody. You don't come here. No. Similarly, of course, when somebody comes for at the end of the class and eats only prasadam in the beginning, we don't mind. But we have to clearly tell them that you should come for the class also eventually. So Prabhupada said that the food for life prasadam should be distributed at the gate in the temple. You know, when people come, they hear the ringing of the bell, singing of the holy names, eat the cup of prasadam. Someday it will inspire them to go inside and see the Lord standing. And they get some sadhupadesh from some sadhu also they get. Otherwise, if we if you are reaching out to the children at the school where the devotees don't go in the devotee dress,
mm-hmm.
the children don't get to see. They don't hear the holy name even mm-hmm. once also. I don't know how many children know it's Hare Krishna Prasadam.
Uh-huh.
Like that. So then it becomes far removed from the original goal for which it is intended.
Uh-huh. Initially, it's true actually.
Like in the Vedic times, you know, they were all in one. For example, Krishna is lifting the Govardhan Hill.
Mm-hmm.
After keeping down, he is telling the Vrajabasis that now, you know, you all circum, take the cows around the Govardhan and everything, and then you distribute Prasadam to Brahmanas and Chandalas. Mm-hmm. and Shudras, even the dogs and you know all the animals also. So in this way you will find the material welfare follows spiritual welfare. Because they all surrendered to Krishna and everybody is eating the prasad after that. You know, everybody surrenders to Krishna, then by that Lord is pleased, Yasmin Tushtam, Jagat Tushtam. Everybody flourishes. But if our services to the people, two things. One is, if devotees with Tilak, Kantimala and Dhoti Kurta, Sari and all, if they are found to be doing social service, our movement can be thoroughly misunderstood by the common people as one yet another movement, just like the hundreds of social welfare movements which are existing on the planet. They may consider that that's one thing. And if the devotees entering such services identify with those services and not identify themselves with Krishna consciousness, they also run a risk like that. And if those services are taken on undue advantage of by the public, without the public committing to Krishna consciousness, then we also join hands with the social service movements. We are not reaching to the, we are not fulfilling the purpose for which Prabhupada started this movement. And these are the reasons why Prabhupada's conversations are so heavy. If you read, like one fellow is telling, he is doing some eye camp, and Prabhupada said, we don't do such camps. Prabhupada saying, why? And Prabhupada is saying, today you do eye camp, tomorrow somebody broke a hand, you make hand camp. Somebody broke a leg, make leg camp. You know, somebody broke a nose, then nose camp. And Prabhupada says, we don't do all these things. And then Prabhupada says, you know, we give Krishna consciousness by which we liberate you from the material body and go, you go back home, back to Godhead. And then Prabhupada says, no more material body, no more material world, no more misery. That's our program. He says like that. So if our eye camps teach people this kind of knowledge, very clearly, then they would be considered meaningful. Because this kind of camps or the food giving is done by devotees with Tilak and Kantimala, everything. You know, devotees should not have some imagined idea about what we are doing. So the, I feel the knowledge as per, knowledge of this is very, very vital. And you would be surprised to know, within our movement there are people who doubt whether distributing Krishna consciousness is superior to doing social service. It's a very pathetic situation. You know? So, if a devotee wearing tilak is not convinced about it, then how are they going to convince the outside people? So, this is very foundational that, like once I was coming in the train, one person asked me, you know, you are a sadhu and how do you survive and all for your kanapina kya karte hain? One devotee traveling with me was saying, हमारे संस्था सब देता है, he was telling like that. Then I told him, well, then I told that man, संस्था नहीं देता है, हमको भी भगवानी देते हैं, आपको ही भगवानी देते हैं. और 84 लाख जीवनों में जीने वाले जीवराशियों को कौन देते हैं? भगवानी देते हैं. I told him. Then I told the devotee, संस्था नहीं देता हमको, Lord is giving through the संस्था. Because ultimately, feeder of all the living entities, you know, nitya, nityanam, chetan, chetan, yeko, bahunam, your Vidadati. Vidadati is Krishna only. Is it not true? So what happens is eventually the buddhi becomes blunt for the people that they don't see Krishna to be the maintainer, Krishna to be the protector, Krishna to be the soul of the universe. You know? So that is why overemphasizing on these services is extremely dangerous. These are actually shadowy activities. These are not the core activities. But he being a king, he has no alternative. Actually, kings have to take care of the, you know, food, clothing, shelter of the praja. This is one of the first duties actually. And then after making praja comfortable, then they also have to create an ambience in the country in such a way, just like Ambarish Maharaj made all the praja into pure devotees. You know, because he created such a spiritual ambience in his country by setting example as a devotee, that also public has to accept. But as a spiritual organization, You know, we are actually doing spiritual service, reaching out to. You see all the seven statement of purposes of Prabhupada.
Hmm.
Where does he talk anything about this?
Hmm.
He doesn't talk at all. You can go through it very carefully. He repeatedly talks in each of the statements only the spiritual aspect.
Hmm.
But we can motivate, you know, big zamindars and other people, just like a lightning or a thunder in a cloud makes the cloud shower water.
Hmm.
Similarly, a saintly person can enlighten the zamindar, and the zamindar can open his khajana, and he can feed the public and everybody like that. And it should be a spiritual inspiration.
Hmm.
The inspiration that the zamindar got was a spiritual one, by which he is doing a material service.
Hmm.
And let the glory go to him.
Hmm.
And let people say that, you know, this fellow was inspired by the saintly person, and let us also hear from him.
Hmm.
That's the right understanding.
Hmm.
Rather than the saintly people taking that thing on their hand, which can bring up a lot of bad name. We can, just like the Salvation Army, you must have heard, that Christians,
hmm.
you know, when they came to India,
hmm.
they called the Salvation Army. They were missionary people preaching to make convert Christians.
Hmm.
So say they started giving the clothes
hmm.
to the people. Now Salvation Army has diluted into a movement of just giving, you know, clothes to people. You ask anybody in India, Salvation Army, people say they are cloth givers. That's how they are known for that. So the shape that Akshay Patra has taken now, you know, the other group in our ISKCON society, has made many people think that we are also one of the food suppliers like that. So I wanted to make this demarcation between king's duty and a spiritual organization's duty.
Yeah. I think it's a very, very important point actually. As a king, he had to do the duty, but as a spiritual organization, we have to be like highly focused only on giving Krishna consciousness. Even if we have to use philanthropy, it has to be used only under the guidance of some very advanced person as a tool in order to give Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, we should. I remember that, I think 5-6 years back in Pune Yatra, when Radhanath Swami Maharaj explained about Bharat Maharaj's pastime, in that class he spoke strongly even about Bhaktivedanta Hospital. He said, if all the devotees, if they are not very strong in their sadhana, then you might actually, he said, it may happen the way Bharat Maharaj, he also got carried away. Bharat Maharaj also was doing some kind of philanthropic activity. So he talked about the importance of strong sadhana. So to use it as a, I think the tool, it has to be done only under the guidance of somebody advanced. And we cannot, those points about, I think, the food for life, of Prabhupada initially, some devotees were also saying that, now our food for life has become restricted only to the midday meal scheme. We have to actually reach, if we have to give, we should give prasadam distribution in the slum areas and outside the temple, make them chant the holy name.
Just in case if we have to explain to somebody. So if we say this part, then we should know if they may question like this, then
how is it different from other?
Yeah, means what is the basis of the Barsanai camp and Anamrit program that we are running?
Well, one is that I don't know exactly whether we are making people to chant, etc. I don't know, but at least one difference is like we are distributing Krishna Prasad. Tell that, and I do not know exactly in the sense as Prabhupada told about making people to chant, how much it is being happening, that I'm not sure, but at least we are distributing Krishna Prasad. We can tell them that you are all distributing just food for the body, but we are distributing Krishna Prasad, which will actually bring them close to Krishna, and by which they are trying to come to solve their problem for eternity.
Food for life will also distribute Krishna Prasad only, no?
Yeah, food for life, yeah. But one thing I have seen, whoever has actually, we are preaching in the medical college, like in so many years, every year some boys, they go to actually assist in the Barsana I camp. Like whoever comes from the Barsana I camp, we can see that they are tremendously inspired and they're just going to do some assist in the eye surgery, but whichever boy who comes from there, when they come, they actually increase their rounds, and many of them actually become very serious. So I can see from the point of view of the result that they have the yatra and working together with the devotees every day, satsang by I think Vishwara Prabhu and different people, some chanting and serving the Vrajavasis actually. That's also the same. I can see the result, they are actually they're tremendously inspired. There is like, I think 24, there is Kirtan, previously some devotees were going there. 24 they are doing Kirtan. And many devotees, it's not just since few years, many people have been attending. Many people, Barsana I camp, it became actually a turning point in their Krishna consciousness. There was one devotee, he would ask many skeptical questions, so many questions, like Gaurang Prabhu. And somehow he would answer, but then he was still not satisfied. But when he first attended the Barsana I camp, and that became a turning point, and after that, his conviction level went to another level just by serving in the Vrajavasis and participating in that. So in that sense, we have seen like many transformational experiences of people who are. Okay, we'll go to the 12th verse. Maitreya Vuvacha Prutu Prajanam Karunam Nishamya Paridevitam Dirgam Dadyav Kurushresha Nimittam Sonva Padyata.
After hearing this lamentation and seeing the pitiable condition of the citizen, King Prutu contemplated this matter for a long time to see if he could find out the underlying cause.
So here, Prutu Maharaj, contemplates for a long time as to what is the cause for starvation. And then after contemplating for a long time, he took up his bow and arrow, exactly like Lord Shiva. He was so angry, he could understand that there is no fault on the part of the citizens. Mother Earth is actually not supplying the food grains. And then he becomes angry at Mother Earth, and he took up his bow and arrow, and he goes to actually shoot the Mother Earth. So here, this anger of Prithu Maharaj is not coming out of the mode of passion. Usually, when a person becomes angry, when the lust is not satisfied, then a person becomes angry. Usually, we don't see somebody thinking for a long time, then he becomes angry. Because when a person thinks for a long time, that means he's more in the mode of goodness. And usually anger is born out of the mode of passion, and people become angry when something dissatisfied, and at a spur of a moment they become angry. But here Prithu Maharaj, after contemplating for a long time, he becomes angry. So this anger is not born out of the mode of passion. It is actually after understanding what is the cause of the starvation, then he becomes angry. So another thing you'll see later, in one of the verses, the qualities of Prithu Maharaj is described as, Prithu Maharaj was as tolerant as Mother Earth. When Maitreya Rishi talks about his quality of tolerance, there he compares Prithu Maharaj with Mother Earth. That Prabhupada says that Mother Earth is the symbol of tolerance.
and then how Mother Earth tolerates so many people actually dig mines, etc. So Mother Earth is a symbol of tolerance, but here Prithu Maharaj is actually trying to attack Mother Earth. So that means our tolerance or intolerance, whatever quality we have, when we are actually trying to display that quality, we have to see the exhibition of this quality, is it going to benefit, how it is going to benefit the people. Here if Prithu Maharaj had exhibited tolerance, then the citizens would have remained hungry forever and they would have died. But Prithu Maharaj's exhibition of intolerance, although it is towards Mother Earth, who is the symbol of tolerance, it is actually going to benefit all the citizens. By that he is performing his duty. So in the same way, just like ahimsa or himsa, ahimsa, like non-violence or violence, we have to see how it is actually going to benefit the people. So Arjuna wanted to practice non-violence, but it would have been the greatest violence. It would have led to the rule of adharma. Iti vyavasito buddhya pragrhita sharasanah sandade vishikam bhume kruddas tripurahayata.
Having arrived at a conclusion, the king took up his bow and arrow and aimed them at the earth, exactly like Lord Shiva, who destroyed the whole world out of anger.
So so here it is explained, Prabhupada explained that the earth can produce sufficiently if everything is properly arranged. But sometimes the earth can refuse to produce food grains for various reasons. The theory that there is a scarcity of food grains due to an increase of population is not very sound theory. And there are other causes that enable the earth to produce profusely or to stop producing. So I think Prabhupada, in the third canto purport also, he talks about the overpopulation. The overpopulation is not a burden of the earth. The main burden of the earth is like what the population is doing. The sinful population, or the what the population is doing, that is the burden of the earth and not the overpopulation. So Prabhupada is telling the same point, that earth can produce profusely or earth can stop producing. So it is not dependent on the number of population, but it is dependent on other reason. So now Mother Earth takes the form of a cow. Pravepamana dharani nisham yodayudam chatam gausat apadravadbita mrigiva mrigayudruta.
When the earth saw that King Prithu was taking his bow and arrow to kill her, she became very much afraid and began to tremble. She then began to flee exactly like a deer, which runs very swiftly when followed by a hunter. Being afraid of King Prithu, she took the shape of a cow and began to run.
So Mother Earth took the shape of a cow because she thought that by taking the shape of a cow, she would actually attract the sympathy of Prithu Maharaj, and then Prithu Maharaj may not attack her. But Prithu Maharaj did not get carried away, but still he actually ran after Mother Earth. You'll see in the 10th canto also, Mother Earth took the shape of a cow in order to actually attract the sympathy of Lord Brahma. And then in order to actually, because all the demigods reside in the body of a cow, Mother Earth took the shape of a cow in order to actually protect all the demigods. And also Mother Earth took the shape of a cow there because she wanted to actually hide from the demons. She wanted to, so she assumed a shape of a cow. So here Mother Earth is taking the shape of a cow, hoping that Prithu Maharaj would not actually attack her. But Prithu Maharaj did not get carried away, he actually ran after her. You can read the translation, next verse. 15th.
That Prithu became very angry and his eyes became as red as the early morning sun. Placing an arrow on his bow, he chased the cow-shaped earth wherever she would run.
So I was in one class, Sulas Radhana Samar was explaining. Usually, when somebody becomes angry, we don't want to look at the eyes of the person because we find it become reddish, one becomes fearful. Like in the Dromara section, we heard that Swami Manu says that when a person becomes angry, others become afraid of him. But here Prithu Maharaj's eyes are compared to, they became red as an early morning sun. And actually early morning sun is something very beautiful. It's very beautiful to look at. If people go to Kanyakumari to see the sunrise and sunset. So he says this shows that Prithu Maharaj's anger is something transcendental. It's a transcendental anger. Sadisho vidisho devi rodasi chantaram tayo davanti tatra tatrainam dadarshanudyatayudam.
The cow-shaped earth ran here and there in the outer space between the heavenly planets and the earth, and wherever she ran, the king chased her with his bow and arrows.
So then, just like a man cannot escape the cruel hands of death, Mother Earth could not escape the attack of Prithu Maharaj, who followed everywhere. And then finally she became helpless, and then she starts addressing Prithu Maharaj from the 18th verse. Uvachacha Mahabhagam Dharma Gyapanna Vatsala Trahimam Api Bhutanam Palane Vastito Bhavan.
Addressing the great opulent King Prithu as the knower of religious principles and shelter of the surrendered, she said, "Please save me. You are the protector of all living entities. Now you are situated as the king of this planet."
So she's addressing Prithu Maharaj by the word Dharmagya. You are the knower of the religious principles. And Apanna Vatsala. And you are the shelter of the surrendered. Satvam Jigamsa Sekasma Dinam Akrita Kilbisham Aghanishyat katam yosham dharmagya iti yomataha.
The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. "I am very poor and have not committed any sinful activities. I do not know why you want to kill me. Since you are supposed to be the knower of all religious principles, why are you so envious of me and why are you so anxious to kill a woman?"
So, so here she says that actually I am completely sinless. And not only I am sinless, moreover I am a woman. So therefore you should not, since I am a sinless and I am actually a woman, why are you so envious of me and why are you so anxious to kill your woman? And then the next verse she says, actually nobody should even beat a sinful woman. Even if a woman is sinful, nobody should even beat a sinful woman. But, and moreover, you are a great person as a king, and you are supposed to be merciful, and you are the protector of everyone, and you are affectionate to the poor, and moreover, I am actually a woman, so how can you actually, why are you trying to actually kill me, why are you trying to attack me? Punishment, yeah. Sama Dhamma. The question is that, like Vrishna Chakatavar explains, that Prithu Maharaj used the fourth method of trying to punish Mother Earth. So why didn't he first try Sama, Dama, some pacifying words before? Why did he immediately go to the take up the fourth method? There is no particular reason mentioned. But, could be like, that's a good guess. Another is, because he saw that, the citizens have performed the yajna, and they performed their duties. Mother, does not produce the food grains, and the citizens are especially starving, and they are, it seems that they are like really starving out of hunger, and if there was a delay, they would die. There's no other explanation given. Any?
In the following section, we are going to study. Even after Prithu Maharaj gives lot of explanation, still the earth is, Earth is also giving many explanations to him back. She is so fed up with the atheists, thieves and rogues, Chori Bhute she calls later on.
Yeah.
Which means, she was in no mood to release the grains simply by one word. Now you call that and say, Earth, I am the king now, please give the grains. She is not going to hear so easily. In fact, even if he is taking the bow and arrow, as a cow, if she came and fell at his feet, he is not going to kill her. Rather, she will ask, why are you aiming at me with a bow and arrow? Tell me what you want. And then if he tells her that, give everyone everything, and the story will be over. But the very fact that she is running away shows that she is in no mood to release the grain. In fact, after she was caught, then she gives lot of explanation on why I don't want to give. And then Prithu Maharaj says, I think you are overly fed up with Vena's kingdom, Now I have come now, Prithu Maharaj is appointed now, and I can assure you that all the grains will be utilized for Vishnu's worship and everything. That is not your problem, that's my problem, I will do it. And then she begins to give like that. So which goes to show that sometimes there is one slogan in Hindi, Jala hua, what is that? Dudh ka jala. They say, which means once a cat drank some hot milk, and his mustache got burnt, So after that, somebody gave him some buttermilk. So he ran away, thinking that it would be very hot. So she is burnt out due to Vena's kingdom. Now when Prithu Maharaj comes, she is still not determined to give. But that is why even to do Samabeda Dama, he had to show his valor. Then the discussion happened after.
Next verse.
Question? Here it seems like contradictory, because does it thoughtful decision or not? Because he want to kill the earth, but as soon as the earth going to die,
he is not wanting to kill the earth. He understood that Mother Earth is not supplying. He is trying to create fear in Mother Earth so that Mother Earth would actually supply all the food grains. In order to create fear, he had to take up the bow and arrow. Twentieth verse. Praharanti na vai strishu krutagas api jantava kim mutatvad vidarajan karuna dina vatsala. Mam vipatyaja ramnavam yatra vishvam pratishtitam atmanam cha prajaschema katam ambasi dasyasi.
The cow shaped earth continued, my dear king, I am just like a strong boat, and all the paraphernalia of the world is standing upon me. if you break me to pieces, how can you protect yourself and your subjects from drowning?
So she is giving different reasons. First she said you are the knower of religious principles and you are the protector of the surrendered. So why are you actually killing me? And then she said, moreover, I am a sinless person, so therefore you should not kill me. And not only that, I am a woman, so you should not attack me. And then she said, one should not even beat a sinless woman. And what to speak of, especially by a person like you, who is merciful and who is supposed to give protection. And then finally she says that, moreover, actually, I am giving shelter to all the living entities. If you actually kill me, you will end up actually troubling all the citizens even more. How can you actually protect your citizens from drowning? Because the earth is actually, she says that I am like a boat which is actually floating in the whole cosmic manifestation. So if you actually break this boat, then all the living entities who are in the boat, they will actually drown. So now Prithu Maharaj starts replying.
So I thought that maybe the personality of Mother Earth is taking the form of a cow, and this whole pastime is happening in the earthly planet also, and she is running to heavenly planet also, as we see. But here now Prabhupada's purpose is that if the earth will be destroyed, then all the citizens will drown. So the physical planet has taken a shape of a cow, or how is it like?
Achha.
Because if that representative earth is killed, then how the planet is destroyed? How is it?
In a sense, like the soul, especially the earth is actually the person actually has taken a separate form as a cow, and then she's running. But ultimately that when the person dies, then the body also can also die after some time. So although the Mother Earth has taken the shape of a cow, she appears to be separate from the mother, the boomy earth. But she is the person. If she is killed, she is saying this planet will also drown.
When Lord Ramchandra just picked up his bow and he wanted to dry up all ocean, that time ocean devata came out and he just prayed in front of the Lord Ramchandra. That person is a different from ocean.
Similarity. Prithur uvacha Vasude Tvam Vadishyami Macha Sanaparan Mukim Bhagam Bargishi Yavrunte Natanoti Chano Vasu.
King Prithu replied to the earthly planet, "My dear earth, you have disobeyed my orders and rulings. In the form of demigod, you accepted your share of the yajnas we perform, but in return you have not produced sufficient food grains. For this reason, I must kill you."
So Prithu Maharaj is saying, you have disobeyed my order and you have taken the share of the yajnas but not produced food grains in return. These are the two sins committed by Mother Earth. And then he says, Yavasam jagat anudinam naiva dog audasam payaha tasyam evam hi dushtayam dando natrana shasyate.
Although you are eating green grass every day, you are not filling your milk bag, so we can utilize your milk. Since you are willfully committing offenses, it cannot be said that you are not punishable due to your assuming the form of a cow.
So here he says that you are eating green grass, but you are not actually giving the milk. And here he says that you are willfully committing offenses. So therefore, we cannot say that you are not punishable because you have taken the form of a cow.
although you have taken the form of a cow, you are punishable because you are willfully committing offenses. Although you are a woman, but because you are willfully committing offenses, so you are definitely punishable. So that is how Prithu Maharaj counter argues that when Mother Earth said, I am a woman, I cannot actually, you cannot punish me. The next verse he gives one more argument. Tvam kal oshadi bijani praksrishtani swayambhuva namunchasyatma ruddani mam avagnaya mandati.
You have so lost your intelligence that despite my orders, you do not deliver the seeds of herbs and grains formerly created by Brahma and now hidden within yourself.
So, here he says that Lord Brahma has given different seeds for the maintenance of the living entities, and you have actually hidden those seeds within yourself. And although I am ordering you, you are not delivering those seeds which are formally created by Lord Brahma. So Prabhupada explains that the duty of the king is king should try to solve scarcity and find out why production is being held up. And another point which Prabhupada explains is that actually everything has been provided by the Supreme Lord for the maintenance of the people. Lord Brahma has given all the seeds and everything has been given for the survival of the living entities. In that sense, the creation is perfect. Amusham kshut paritanam artanam paridevitam shamayishyami madbane binnayastavamedasa.
Now, with the help of my arrows, I shall cut you to pieces and with your flesh satisfy the hunger-stricken citizens who are now crying for want of grains. Thus, I shall satisfy the crying citizens of my kingdom.
So, here he says that if you do not actually provide grains, then I will actually feed all the grains by actually killing you. And I will actually feed them with the help of your flesh. So one may say, like, what about meat eating? Prithu Maharaj is actually going to feed meat to, but not only meat, he is going to feed like cow's meat to the citizens. So this is like an emergency thing. Because all the citizens were actually dying out of hunger, and just because he is threatening by saying, if you don't give the grains, then I have to actually somehow make them survive, so therefore I will give them, in an emergency, I will give them your own meat. So Prabhupada writes that point of law of necessity. It is here indicated that in a rare circumstance, when there is no supply of grains, the government may sanction the eating of meat. However, when there is sufficient food, the government should not allow the eating of cow's flesh just to satisfy the fastidious tongue. So, one should not make the apadharma as the normal dharma. So there is our constitutional, our swadharma. Like when we talk about swadharma, one is the material aspect of swadharma and the spiritual aspect of swadharma. The spiritual aspect of swadharma is that we are Jivera Swarupahi Krishnere Nityadas. And the material aspect of swadharma is according to our position as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, women, whatever the swadharma. And even in the case of material aspect of swadharma, in the case of emergency, there is certain activities which we can perform. Like Narada Muni explains in the 7th canto, 11th and 12th chapter, what are the duties which a person can perform in the case of emergency. In the case of emergency, when there are no brahmanas, sometimes people lower than brahmanas can actually teach Vedic knowledge. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that, so therefore, we had to give initiation to different people because it was an emergency situation. So we had to give people, even those who are not qualified, to preach Krishna consciousness. He mentions that.
In that way we were following the footsteps of Narada Muni. We followed the instructions of Narada Muni. But when you extend the emergency for normal circumstance, then it will create problem. When you use the emergency window often, emergency window becomes a normal window. So one has to be like highly careful. Just like some, there are certain like Prabhupada told some devotees to go and preach in communist countries. So that devotee said, but in communist countries we won't get any vegetable foodstuffs, we'll have to eat meat. So Prabhupada said, eat meat but preach Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said that, but the point is that it was an emergency, so he said like that. So we cannot use that for, we cannot quote that in some normal this one, or we have to understand in the particular context in which it is being spoken and what is the mood in which Prabhupada spoke. Another devotee, Devamrita Maharaj is telling this past time, another devotee told Prabhupada that, but if I go to preach Krishna, what about my sadhana? So Prabhupada actually said, to hell with your sadhana. But preach Krishna consciousness, like that he said. So if we take those statements without understanding the particular circumstance and emergency situation, then we can get a completely different understanding. We can use that to actually prove our own viewpoint, our own hidden motivation. So we can see how the Vedic scriptures, they are actually nonsense, they are practical. They also take into consideration of the emergency situation. You can appreciate that particular aspect of the Vedic scriptures. So another point which Prabhupada says is that, as described in a previous verse, cows and other animals should be given sufficient grass to eat. If despite a sufficient supply of grass, a cow does not supply milk, and if there is an acute shortage of food, the dried up cow may be utilized to feed the hungry masses of people. So, like when somebody is given something, it's also much is expected from that person. So Prithu Maharaj is saying, you have been given all the share of yajna. So you are supposed to give in return in the form of the food grains. So why are you not giving? Since you are not giving, I will actually kill you and supply the flesh to others. So according to the law of necessity, first of all, human society must try to produce food grains and vegetables. But if they fail in this, then they can indulge in flesh eating. Otherwise not. Like yesterday, Chaitanya Charanru was giving this example in the class. Just like we say our words, the sadhu's words, they are supposed to cut illusion. It's like a surgery which is supposed to remove the tumor from the heart of a person. It's supposed to remove the illusion. But usually when a person is having a particular sickness, he immediately does not go to a surgeon, you please perform surgery. Even the doctor also immediately does not recommend surgery. First, like other medicines are tried out and other doctor also give some other prescriptions. When those things are tried out, when there is absolutely no chance, then the surgery is performed. So similarly, it is not that when you immediately meet the first person, you speak, you do the surgery in the form of like speaking strong words to cut the illusion. Like first we actually try to present Krishna, present the philosophy in a sweet manner and different, in a way we can appreciate, etc. And then at a certain time, after developing a relationship with a particular person, just like Vidura had established a relationship with Dhritarashtra, then he spoke strong words. So similarly here, Prithu Maharaj is actually saying that he's saying that if you don't actually supply the food grains, then I will actually kill you and I'll feed the citizens with the flesh of your body. The conclusion is that the earth produces sufficient grain to feed the entire population, but the distribution of this grain is restricted due to trade regulations and a desire for profit. So there is a different books which are written how many places in the world the starvation is because of, it's not because of overpopulation, it is because of greed on the parts of the different people who are not distributing the food grains properly. And they hoard the food grains secretly just to maintain, increase the price of the food grains. And and sometimes in certain places, they actually throw the food grains in the oceans also. So if there were one government on the surface of the earth to handle the distribution of grain, there would be no question of scarcity, no necessity to open slaughterhouses, and no need to present false theories about overpopulation. So next verse is a very important verse. Puman yoshit utakliba atma sambhavano damaha bhuteshu niranukrosho nripanam sadvado vadaha.
An equal person, be a man, woman or important anj, Enoch, who is only interested in his personal maintenance and has no compassion for other living entities, may be killed by the king. Such killing can never be considered actual killing.
So here, Prithu Maharaj says, any cruel person, whether he is a man or a woman or even or an eunuch, if he is actually interested in his own maintenance, if he is not worrying about others, such a person can be killed by the king, and there is nothing wrong in such killing. So because Mother Earth presented the argument, I am a woman, so how can you kill me? So Prithu Maharaj is saying, you are actually a cruel person, because when so many citizens are actually dying out of starvation, when you are simply, you are not doing anything about, when you can do something to actually to help them by producing food grains, because you are concerned about your own selfishness, so therefore you can be killed, there is nothing wrong in such killing. So that here Prabhupada says that selfish platform on the material platform and also the spiritual platform, both are condemned. Here the citizens are actually starving out of hunger, but Mother Earth is not doing anything. And Prabhupada explains that as far as the field of spiritual activities is concerned, when a devotee is self-satisfied and does not preach the glories of Krishna, he is not considered a first-class devotee. So you see, whether selfishness, whether on the material platform or on the spiritual platform, both are actually not appreciated. Both are not appreciated. In one, I remember, once one devotee asked a question that Radhanath Maharaj said that, like, I want to chant more rounds. I have desire to chant more. I have to do so many more, I want to do more reading, etc. So then he said, apart from the morning sadhana, you will gain more by giving Krishna consciousness more to others than by doing sadhana all day along. So, like, we have been given the morning program because we are doing this study also as a service only, so that we can. But the point is, like, sometimes the name of doing more sadhana, we neglect like preaching Krishna consciousness, that attitude he was talking about. That if we actually, apart from the morning sadhana, we will gain more mercy of the Lord by giving more than by doing sadhana all day long. So in the sense,
Selfishness on the spiritual platform, that is also not appreciated. Like I think the last chapter or previous chapter, there was a verse which came that if a Brahmana is actually self-satisfied and does not help others when they are actually in trouble, then whatever spiritual credits he has accumulated, that will actually go away. Just like the water which is kept in a pot, and there is a hole in the pot, that water will actually go. Next verse. Tvam stabdam durmadan nitva mayagam tilashasharai atma yoga balenema darayishyamaham praja.
You are very much puffed up with pride and have lost and have become almost insane. Presently you have assumed the form of a cow by your mystic powers. Nonetheless, I shall cut you into the small pieces like grains, and I will uphold the entire population by my personal mystic powers.
So here Prithu Maharaj is answering the last point of Mother Earth. She said that if you kill me, you will actually end up troubling all the citizens, because I am like a boat who is actually giving support to all the citizens. So here Prithu Maharaj says, I will actually kill you, but by my mystic power, I will actually protect all the population. I will uphold the entire population by my personal mystic powers. So in this way he is giving a counter argument. So Prithu Maharaj did not need the help of, as far as the destruction of the citizens is concerned, Maharaj Prithu maintained that he could uphold everyone by his own mystic powers. Just like actually Prabhupada explained that all the planets are floating because of the power of Lord Sankarshan, which the modern scientists call as gravitational force. Actually Lord Sankarshan is actually holding all the planets in the proper orbit. And because Prithu Maharaj is a Shaktiyavesh incarnation of the Lord, the same power of Lord Sankarshan is there. So he says that by that mystic powers I will actually uphold all the citizens. So then, next verse. Evam manyuma yim murtim kritantam iva bibratam pranata pranjali praha mahi sanjata vepatuhu.
At this time Prithu Maharaj became exactly like Yamraj, and his whole body appeared very angry. In other words, he was anger personified. After hearing, the planet Earth began to tremble. So he surrendered and with folded hands began to speak as follows.
So when Mother Earth saw Prithu Maharaj as anger, death personified, so he started actually offering prayers. So now the rest of the chapter, from 29 to the last verse, this chapter, the prayers offered by Mother Earth.
Daro uvacha nama parasmai purushaya mayaya vinyastananatana vegunatmane namasvarupanubhavena nirduta dravyakriyakaraka vibramormaye.
The planet Earth spoke, "My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, you are transcendental in your position, and by your material energy, you have expanded yourself in various forms and species of life through the interaction of three modes of material nature. Unlike some other masters, ye always remain in your transcendental position and are not affected by the material creation, which is subject to different material interactions. Consequently, you are not bewildered by material activities."
So here, Mother Earth, when planet Earth saw that King Prithu Maharaj is still angry, and when Mother Earth could actually, at this point, Mother Earth, now she could understand that Prithu Maharaj is actually the incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So when she could understand that, so now Mother Earth is offering these prayers in order to pacify Prithu Maharaj. And she first pacifies Prithu Maharaj, and then she explains why she had hidden the herbs and grains.
and then she will tell the process for how to actually excavate the different grains and seeds. So here she says that she explains the transcendental position of the Lord. By your material energy, you have expanded yourself in various forms and species of life through the three modes of material nature. But although you have expanded through different forms, but still you remain in your transcendental position, and you are not affected by the six waves of material interaction, or vibrama urmaye, the waves of material existence. There are six waves of material existence. They are hunger, thirst, old age, disease, and lament, shok and moha, illusion and lamentation. That Privarat Maharaj's chapter, this verse comes. Naivam vidha purushakara urukramasya. So there the six waves are mentioned. So here Mother Earth is saying that you are actually the cause of the cosmic manifestation. You only expand through the three modes of material nature into different forms and objects. But you remain transcendental. So this is the first point which Mother Earth is saying. By realizing your Swarupa Shakti, you are understood to be completely free of the waves of samsara created by body, senses and sense devatas. So Prabhupada, in the purport, he talks about Achintya Bheda by the philosophy, how the Lord, the entire material world is working under the direction of the Supreme Lord, at the same time he remains completely aloof. Maya Jakshena Prakriti, he quotes that verse. And in this way, he explains the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. And then he also explains, not only the Supreme Lord is actually transcendental, but even the devotees of the Lord, while living in this world, they remain transcendental. And just like this verse comes, Etat Ishanam Ishasya Prakriti Stopi Tadgunai. So even a devotee is also completely transcendental. Prabhupada quotes this Rupa Goswami's verse from Bhakti Rasama Sindhu. Iha yasya harer dasya karmana manasagira nikilasya pyavastasu jivan mukta samuchyate. Even a devotee, when he is engaging his body, mind and words in the service of the Lord, he is liberated in this life. Going through was explaining, in the Christian concept, they say liberation can be achieved only in the next life, when you accept Jesus as a savior. But after giving up this body, but the Vaishnava theology says liberation can be achieved right now in this life when a person is engaging his body, mind and words in the service of the Lord.
Yenaham atma yatanam vinirmita datra yato yam guna sarga sangraha sayeva mam hantumuda yudasvarat upastitonyam charanam kamashraye.
The planet Earth continued, "My dear Lord, you are the complete conductor of the material creation. You have created this cosmic manifestation and the three material qualities, and therefore you have created me, the planet Earth, the resting place of all living entities. Yet you are always fully independent, my Lord. Now that you are present before me and ready to kill me with your weapon, let me know where I should go to take shelter, and tell me who can give me protection."
So here Mother Earth is exhibiting all the symptoms of surrender, and she is pleading the whole... The mood of Mother Earth in offering this prayers is that, please protect me. Please do not kill me. So, Vrishna Chakravarti explains, a person who has actually planted a creeper should not actually destroy the creeper with one's own hand. So, Mother Earth is saying, you have only created me. because she is understanding the position of Prithumara. You only created me, so therefore you should not kill me. And then she says, moreover, I actually assist you in your service, because I am giving shelter to all the living entities. So why are you actually killing me? I am giving protection to all the four types of living entities who are born from eggs, the perspiration, or from the embryos and from the earth. So therefore, please do not kill me. Next verse.
Yayetadadav asudyacharacharam swamayayatma shayaya vitarkyaya Tvayaiva soyam kila goptumudyata katam numam dharma parojigamsati.
In the beginning of creation, you created all these moving and non-moving living entities by your inconsolable energy. Through this very same energy, you are now prepared to protect the living entities. Indeed, you are the supreme protector of religious principles. Why are you so anxious to kill me, even though I am in the form of a cow?
So here Mother Earth's point is that you are actually, when you are ready to give protection to everyone, so why are you not ready to give protection to me? Why she should be killed when the Lord is prepared to give protection to everyone? And moreover, after all, I am the resting place for all the living entities. Our Vishnu Chakrataka writes in his purport, Prithu Maharaj is telling to Mother Earth, since I have created, the world is made by me and the world is also destroyed by me. I only create, I only destroy. So why not? I can actually destroy you, I can kill you. So Mother Earth says, but right now you are doing the service of protecting the people. So that is how you have appeared. This is not the time for destruction. Now you have appeared to give protection, you appear to maintain the people. So at this time, when you are trying to maintain the things, why are you trying to kill me? Please do not kill me. Next verse.
Nunam bateshasya samihitam janais tanmayaya durjayaya kritatma bhi na lakshyate yas Vakarotakarayat Yoneka Yeka Paratascha Yeshwara. My dear Lord, although you are one, by your inconceivable potencies you have expanded yourself in many forms. Through the agency of Brahma you have created this universe. You are therefore directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who are not sufficiently experienced cannot understand your transcendental activities because these persons are covered by your illusory energy.
So here Mother Earth says that actually those who are unintelligent, those who are under the influence of Maya, they cannot understand your transcendental or inconceivable activities. You only, by your inconceivable potencies, you only actually created this universe through the agency of Brahma. But those who are not sufficiently experienced cannot understand your activities. So here she talks about how unintelligent people, the point is that one needs the mercy of the Lord in order to understand his transcendental activities. That is the theme of Prabhupada's purport. Unless one is favored especially with grace, endowed with grace, he cannot understand how the Supreme Lord acts through his different energies. Even Lord Brahma is not the energetic, but is one of the manifestations of the Lord's marginal energy. Lord Brahma is only used as an instrument. And Prabhupada explains that although sometimes the Lord's plans may appear contradictory, but there is a definite plan behind all the actions of the Lord. Only an experienced person can understand the plan of the Lord. Next verse. Sargadi yosya nur runanda dik.
Text number 32.
32 she says that
those who are not sufficiently experienced cannot understand your transcendental activities because these persons are covered by your illusory energy.
Yeah, jivasya.
Jivasya, no?
This we say Prithu Maharaj is Shaktavesh Avatar, he is Jiva. So is it not incorrect to call him like Supreme Personality of Godhead directly? Seems like little flattery over here or what?
No, I think in the sense like sometimes like Narada Muni is called as Bhagavan certain places, like the spiritual masters as the Supreme.
Prabhupada was addressed as Supreme Personality of Godhead, then Prabhupada was very wild for it, he was not. So we see that incidence, whereas we consider Prabhupada also Shakta Vishavata. So
now in the it's usually it is mainly the like when Prabhupada, like whenever somebody, many times whenever he would ask, answer the questions, you would not only see the particular question, you would see the attitude behind the particular person. So Prabhupada could see that those people are actually, they are infected by Mayavad. But here, definitely Mother Earth is, although the externally the words appear to be as if Prithumaj is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but because later it is explained that Prithu Maharaj is the Shaktyavesh incarnation of the Lord. Shaktyavesh avatar also there are two types. One is Jiva is actually empowered, living entity is empowered, that is Shaktyavesh avatar. Another is the Lord appears with a particular.
Yeah. We discussed that yesterday. Uh-huh. And Prithu Maharaj's case is specifically that he is like a Jiva being empowered. Uh-huh. So how is he different from, I mean, Srila Prabhupada in that sense?
In that sense, when a living entity is empowered,
yes, Prithu Maharaj is the representative of Palan Shakti, so he can excel at maintenance. But here Mother Cow is saying that you are the creator also, you are destructor also. So he is the Shaktavesh avatar for Palan Shakti. Like Prabhupada, for example, if we consider Prabhupada may be Shaktavesh avatar for preaching Shakti, then he will excel at that particular field very, you know. But that kind of excellence may not be shown in any other field. We cannot attribute that you are also, you can also do this also, that also. But so, how is that like? It is little difficult to understand.
I think I'll think about this. Let me check. We'll stop here because it's 12:55. Then we'll take it and found.
Here, so Bhagavatam, we are accepting Bhagavatam as the authority of scripture. And Bhagavatam described to Prithu Maharaj is a Shaktavesh avatar. But in case of the Sri Prabhupada, we are considering, but our words are not that on the level of Bhagavatam. So this is one of the points.
No, but there are other great souls they mentioned. Like we can see by the we can infer by the it's not that by our own words, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur had predicted very soon here Senapati Bhakta will come, he will actually propagate the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world. And so we are understanding by the words of the other great sadhus, and we are also seeing by the superhuman activities which he had performed. Superhuman activities in the form of like preaching at a old age to such a people, so many people. So Prabhupada says that we can understand incarnation of the Lord when it is mentioned in the scriptures and by the superhuman activities which a person performs. So we understand how Prabhupada is specially empowered because by seeing his activities, and also it is actually other Bhaktivinoda Thakur has predicted, and you could see that, and even Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj,
but like
Krishna Shakti Vina, we are saying, but by these
Yes, understood.
But like that, Senapati Bhakta. But that is a devotee, na? Senapati devotee. Not a, like Supreme Personality of Godhead. And here, Brahmaji also described.
Empowered. Very soon, a great devotee will come who will actually propagate the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shakya Vishani means like one is empowered with a particular with a particular service, with a particular power.
Here, Guruji, in case of Ruthu Maharaj, even Lord Brahma also saw the all signs on his palm. So by that, by seeing that, he considered he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in case of this Sri Prabhupada,
that's what I mentioned. Say Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and we can see by his activities how he has Bhaktivinoda Thakur has. Like, if you see from the words, say Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj, and nobody has propagated Krishna consciousness to such a in such a short time, such a old age. Nobody has ever done. And more than that, well, when we follow, actually, when you are following somebody, you are following that person because he is following the Guru Parampara. We may not know, like, our Guru may be a pure devotee or something, because we can understand, only a pure devotee can understand another person as a pure devotee. Purity of a person can be judged only by another pure person. But we can understand whether this person is following the previous acharya. Even if we don't know that he is a pure devotee, but we can, as long as he is actually following the Guru Parampara, that we can understand. We can continue to follow him. But in the case of Srila Prabhupada, we can see definitely by his activities and by the words of the other great souls.
Personal
physique?
Actually, Prabhupada is as good as Lord Nityananda in delivering jagais and madais. Because Nityananda Avesh has descended in Prabhupada. And jagai madai were delivered by Nityananda Prabhu, but Prabhupada delivered people who are more difficult than jagai madai also. And Prabhupada has made that verse to Tadvag Visargo, Janataga Viplavo, and also Kirata Honandra Pulinda Pulakasha. And nobody before Prabhupada has shown even one example of somebody from a Malaysia background chanting the holy name. So, which means the Shastric verses are also indicating to Prabhupada's descent. Also. And also that Bhavishya Puran, where the Bhakti Mata is telling that Videsham Gachami, she says, when her two children are Jnana Vairagya are very weak. You know, she came from Dravida Desh to the Maharashtra and Gujarat, and then she came to Vrindavan. And she said that now very soon in future I will go abroad and then I will return back to India. Then India will flourish. That is coming in the Bhagavat Mahatmya, also it's mentioned. Before she takes instruction from Chatush Kumaras. So that Videsham Gachami, which she says, everybody was wondering in India why it is mentioned in the Puranas like this. And that was made possible only by Prabhupada. So because Prabhupada has been a special instrument in the hands of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Mahaprabhu himself has predicted in that Mora Senapati Bhakti, there is one verse which is mentioned. And based on the, as you rightly said, based on what he has achieved, which has never been achieved in the past before. And Prabhupada himself speaks in one recording that actually I never wanted to come to this world, I never liked austerity, but Krishna requested me, so I have descended. So if you really have faith in Prabhupada's purports, then we should have faith in Prabhupada's wordings also. When he says, I am a Nitya Siddha and I have come into this world on the request of Krishna, it has to be true. Because great acharyas are not eager to become popular and they don't speak such things.
This one about physiognomy, wherein physical features also talk about, you know, the personality, the greatness of a personality. So there is some science about 32 symptoms of physical characteristics like forehead, raised nose and something. So one article was there in BTG or somewhere, I don't exactly remember what it was, but it concluded that many such of those auspicious symptoms were seen in Srila Prabhupada's face and body. They may not have those hand markings as such. Those kind of great symptoms were seen.
Rantaran Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Material science versus spiritual knowledge. Why the spiritual knowledge is enlivening? And why material science becomes eventually disgusting? Because the how the spiritual knowledge reciprocates, that was very beautiful.